The Holy Gospel according to Matthew, the 17th chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And Jesus was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became bright as light. Suddenly there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will set up three tents here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While Peter was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my son, the beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." And when they raised their eyes, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Please be seated. I can't remember exactly why it happened, but for some reason, I was the last one to leave my grandmother's house after her funeral. As in, it was my job to turn out the lights, lock the door, and drive away. Everyone else had left for the airport or had wanted to get on the road early in the morning, but I had two small children with me, which makes things a little bit slower in the morning. So there I was, closing up the house for the last time, which sounded like a fine plan until that moment. It was all good until I realized that this place would soon belong to someone else. And so I hesitated there on the front step, and I started to think, maybe I could buy this house. I could keep it as a summer home, because who doesn't want to spend the summers in a village of 300 people in the middle of an Iowa cornfield? Sounds great. But that wasn't practical. But I desperately wanted to keep that house, to preserve it as the holy site that it was to me. During a childhood that was filled with constant moves and changes, my grandma's house was safety, security, history. It was home. Now, eventually, my kids calling from the backseat of the car broke my dreaming. And so I locked the door of the house. And I started the car and I drove away. A few years later, my mom and I traveled back to that town in rural Iowa for a family reunion. And it was a very special event because some of our cousins who had stayed in Sweden when the rest of the family immigrated to the US were going to join us in one big family event. During a lull in the reunion activity, my mom and I decided to go drive past the house. And I was so excited. I was filled with all of those memories, the sights and the sounds and the smells. I could just see it, that house, which was perched on the top of the hill in the center of town, across the street from the Lutheran church. I could see the apple tree in the backyard and the rope swing that my grandfather made for me. I could also hear the sound of the awful tornado siren, which was perched behind the house, which didn't only ring for tornadoes, but also every day at noon and six to call the farmers in from fields. I could smell my grandma's beef roast and potatoes cooking on the stove. But when we drove up to the house, it was all wrong. The tree and the swing were both missing. Someone had removed the white stucco and black wooden shutters and had made it all look very modern. And there was a fancy porch around the house now, which replaced my grandfather's humble lawn chair and portable ashtray. And it just wasn't right. It wasn't right, of course, because my grandparents weren't there. It wasn't right because it never was the house or the tree or the tornado siren, which mattered. It was the people. I had always thought that this was a holy house, but now I realized it was my grandparents who made it so. It was their love that made it holy ground. And now, because I carry their love with me still, every step is made on holy ground. On this day, on Transfiguration Sunday, we hear how Peter, James, and John were both confused and surprised in much the same way on the mountain. Jesus took Peter and James and his brother John, led them up on a high mountain by themselves, and then Jesus was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white, and Moses and Elijah showed up talking with them, and Peter obviously said, "Lord, it's good for us to be here. I am going to make three houses right here. One for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah, and we're going to keep this moment forever." In other words, when Peter saw Jesus transfigured, his instinct was to say, "This place is amazing. This place is amazing. Let's stay here." We do love the idea of holy places, don't we? Holy places, holy houses, holy ground. Places like Jerusalem, for example. Paulinus of Nola in the 5th century wrote, "No other sentiment draws people to Jerusalem than the desire to see and touch the places where Christ was physically present and to be able to say from their very own experience, 'We have gone into his tabernacle and have worshiped in the places where his feet have stood.'" When I was living and working in Jerusalem, I met often with church groups who were visiting, maybe like some of you who have made a trip like that. And my goal after church was to tell them about the Christians who are living there now, about Palestinian Christians and how they are affected by the current political situation there. I would tell them about our church receptionist, Hassan, and how it takes him 2 hours to travel just a few miles across a military checkpoint to get to work every day. I would tell them where I have met Christ in my neighbor on both sides of the wall. I wanted them to especially know about the people I have met who are carrying the cross of Christ today. But invariably, as I was doing that loving speech, someone would raise their hand and say, "But Pastor, it must be so wonderful to be here in this place where 2,000 years ago Jesus' footsteps landed. It must be so good to be here." Indeed, it was. But like the disciples gathered on that high mountain with Jesus, it's natural for us to be attracted to holy ground and holy places and holy cities. Our spirits long to connect with God, to experience the divine, to glimpse the beauty and peace of heaven in the midst of our often painful and broken world. And so we want to know where can I go to find God? And wouldn't it be nice if the Holy Land tourism committees could really follow through on their promises to guarantee that if I buy a ticket and stand in line, I will have a revelation. I will have an epiphany. I will see Jesus shining like the sun. But that's really not how it works, is it? Even though this morning's gospel lesson takes place on a high mountain, close to the clouds, seemingly close to God, it seems to me that the message we really want to receive from God today is not about a place. Yes, Jesus was transfigured on a mountain. Yes, God revealed something very important on that day. But what was that revelation exactly? Was it that God, the creator of all things, wants the followers of Jesus to always go to the same place to find God? I think we get the answer after Peter suggests building those holy houses and saying, I will preserve this holy ground and this holy moment for eternity. The answer comes when the voice of God comes from the clouds and says, this is my son, the beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. The voice didn't say, this mountain is special. The voice didn't say, this place is special. The voice said, this is my beloved. Listen. Especially, the voice didn't say, this is the site of my future theme park and convention center in Kitchener. Scripture tells us that when the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. And then Jesus came and touched them, saying, get up, don't be afraid. And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus alone. Hear that again. Jesus came and touched the disciples. I think the power of that simple touch is the most important revelation of all in this text. It was Jesus, not the mountain, who was transfigured on that day. It was Jesus, not the ground he walked on, who was revealed to be beautiful and holy and special. Shining like the sun, Jesus in that moment was revealed to be the light of the world and to be a continuing in the tradition of the great prophets like Moses and Elijah. Through a simple, comforting touch on the shoulders of some fearful disciples, our God was revealed as one who is big enough and powerful enough, loving enough and merciful enough to come among us in the humblest of ways as a baby born in Bethlehem. Because Jesus walked among us and walks alongside us now, all earth is holy ground. Because Jesus had a body and we have bodies, all bodies are holy ground. Because Jesus had parents and friends and teachers and neighbors, all relationships are holy ground. Because Jesus ate with sinners and outcasts as well as disciples, all tables are holy ground. Most of all, because Jesus knew pain and sorrow and suffering as we do, friends, not one moment of our lives is ever empty of holy presence. This is a revelation that we need today. I woke up this morning and looked at the news and I saw numbers I couldn't imagine. 46,000 people dead in Turkey and Syria. So many shootings, so much pain, so much suffering. On Wednesday, we'll gather as a community to begin the season of Lent. At noon or at 7 p.m., we'll be marked with ashes in remembrance of our own mortality. And we will together pray for the strength and courage for our personal and communal journeys of repentance and spiritual growth. As always, when we begin the Lenten season and prepare to hear the story of Jesus' own temptation and journey, we need to know that God is not only present with us in mountaintop experiences. The grace and mercy of God do not only shine in the moments and places of beauty and transcendence, but grace and mercy are present with us in our struggles and in our doubts and in our mistakes and in our grief, in our darkest hours. And so, dear people, hear this again. Every moment of our lives, from the mountaintop to the valley, from Jerusalem to the ends of the earth, from the cradle to the grave, every moment is filled with holy presence. Thanks be to God.